The Ethics Committee meeting will come to order. Representative Simon?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the minutes of March 31st, 2009.
At the March 31st meeting in 2009, the Ethics Committee adopted the Code of Conduct and the Rules of Procedure. All in favor of the adoption of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Today's hearing is a probable cause hearing. We are going to discuss the reasonable grounds for presuming guilt in someone charged of a complaint. A complaint has to be issued by two members of the House of Representatives, and it has to be received by the Speaker within a period of days. If a Speaker is not able to reach a conclusion of the complaint and is committed to send it on to the Ethics Committee. I received on 1:30 in the morning, on the morning of May 16th, a copy of the complaint that was issued by Representative Emmer and Representative Biskin. So the person that was complained about was Representative Gardner. In our packets today, we have what was submitted to us by Representative Emmer and Biskins, a June 1 document in which is a letter to the chair and all members of the committee. And in that letter, in that packet, was the ethics complaint, was a communication to colleagues from Paul Gardner, and a copy of the letter from Paul Gardner in email from Representative Emmer to Representative Mariani, from Representative Gardner, and a May 15th dated letter sent by Representative Emmer to Speaker Kelleher. Those are the documents that have been submitted to us by the complainants. In our packet, we also have a letter from Representative Paul Gardner sent on May 11th to Representatives Emmer and Biskins, and a copy of an email sent to all representatives from Representative Gardner. Those two documents have been submitted to the committee by Representative Gardner. In a communication that I made to Representative Biskins, Representative Emmer, and Representative Gardner, I said that we were going to hold this Ethics Committee meeting on Tuesday, and that it would be a probable cause hearing. We are seeking to discover if there is probable cause to go forward. Representative Emmer and Biskins, we are asking that you make your statements as completely as possible as to the nature of the complaint, what evidence you want to put on the table and what you think the Ethics Committee should do. We urge you to make your testimony relate to the complaint at hand. This is a public hearing of a committee of the House of Representatives. We ask that all testimony is presented in a clear, a calm, respectful fashion. We ask for patience from the public and the media covering this hearing. We are going to take care to handle this matter in a fair manner. We are not experienced at this. The last complaint to come before the House of Representatives was in 2000. Representative Emmer and Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. First, I have a question about process, Madam Chair. Your communication that you've referenced indicated that the committee was going to entertain both sides. I think it was 30 minutes for each side. I'm wondering if there is a process for rebuttal.
Representative Emmer, we are hopeful that the committee's questions will determine, but if there's a need for rebuttal, there will be time made for that.
All right. I don't know that there will. I'm just asking. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Representative Biskins and I have talked this morning, and I'll start. I think the Chair has correctly identified. Yesterday we submitted a letter, or I did on our behalf, to the committee. And I attached the items that Madam Chair already identified, which included the May 8th complaint, along with the electronic transmission that was at issue. And then the second attachment was the email to all members from Representative Gardner. I just want to make sure it's clear that when the packet was submitted to the Madam Chair and to the members of the committee and also to Representative Gardner yesterday and others, that the May 11th letter from Representative Gardner was inadvertently not included in the submission that you received, but it was submitted shortly after that. And hopefully you got that with our materials.
Yes, we did.
And in any event, Madam Chair, I understand this morning now that Representative Gardner submitted both pieces of paper as well.
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Members of the committee, I think what we need to do is make it clear that at least our understanding, based on the rules that this committee has adopted, that the procedure today under Rule 7 is that this committee is asked to look at two things. One, whether a sufficient factual basis exists to believe the allegations contained in the complaint are true. And number two, if they are true, whether they tend to support disciplinary action. The first threshold is met based upon not only the complaint, but Representative Gardner has already acknowledged what he did. What happened was, during a lengthy and vigorous, aggressive debate in which both Representative Biskins and I participated at length, Representative Gardner was using a new form of electronic communication that I think, I don't want to speak for Representative Biskins, but I believe that he and I are both technologically deficient when it comes to this new technology. Although both of us had heard of twittering or whatever it is, that the communication that's used, neither one of us has ever participated in that. During the debate, someone brought to me, a staff member brought to me, a copy of a document that you will have under attachment one. It was attached to the actual complaint. This attachment, what it does is, this is defamation. It's libel. It's written. It's published. It's out on the internet. It suggests that Representative Biskins was wearing sunglasses because perhaps he had a black eye. It suggests that Representative Emmer was particularly demeaning and belittling towards female members during debate through rage and sarcasm. I will just, in anticipation of any questions, I raised that with the Speaker the same day. The Speaker said she had no idea what this referred to, and frankly, had that happened in any way, I would have been the first one to go to a member and say, I apologize if you took my comments wrong. So number one, it didn't happen. Number two, it violated the ethical rules which have been cited in the complaint, and then I'm also going to provide this to the committee before I leave, but Speaker Kelleher on Thursday night the 14th sent out an email to all members on the House floor reminding them of what our House policy is with respect to electronic communications. I have a copy of it here, and I've highlighted a couple of portions. In the first paragraph of the rule or the policy, it says each member is expected to adhere to the highest ethical standards when conducting House business and to follow any applicable state statutes or laws. And then in the second paragraph, in using email, internet access, or other communications technology, members should use good judgment in both the type of message created and the tone and content of the message. The important sentence in that paragraph: members should use generally accepted standards of business conversation in their emails and internet postings. The traditional rules of reasonableness, respect, courtesy, common sense, and legal requirements also apply to electronic communications. Legal requirements is what we're here to talk about. The second prong, because as I've indicated and we provided you with the letter, Representative Gardner, I appreciate, recognizes the seriousness of his violation of these rules and has acknowledged that and sent us an apology. The problem is this does require disciplinary action, as the Speaker already recognized and tried to, in effect, mediate and resolve. The issues have to do with violation of these rules. And if you take a look at attachment 2, I believe it is, Madam Speaker, Madam Chair, in attachment 2, this is the email from Representative Gardner to all members. Attachment 3, the one thing I want to point out for you that I think you inadvertently missed is this is backwards. Attachment 3 is my response to members and Carlos Mariani, Representative Mariani, in response to his email, which is found on page 2 at the bottom. What happens is the Speaker sits down with us in a meeting, which is documented in this letter, in attachment 4, where she attempted to resolve this matter, and she recommended certain discipline in the form of a private apology, taking it down off the internet, and then a public apology, because remember, we discussed the indelible character of the internet. Once you put something out in the internet, it's out there forever. Even if you want to take it down, whoever it's reached, it's there forever. That was the discussion in our meetings. It was also a discussion that this could very easily involve either side of the aisle. So it's important with respect to precedent. The importance here is this apology. If you read the title of it in attachment 2, it says, How Not to Communicate with Each Other. Respectfully, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Gardner either does not understand the gravity of the statements that were made and how they were used to influence and intimidate, in effect, two members' reputations. He either doesn't understand the gravity of that, or he's trying to give an apology without a consequence. And how do I know that? Well, Representative Mariani thanked Representative Gardner for his apology, but didn't understand what this is. And what it is, Madam Chair, if you go to attachment 4, go to the last paragraph, This is what I wrote to the speaker on Mark Biskins, Representative Biskins, in my behalf on May 16th, I believe. Maybe it was dated the 15th. In any event, Madam Chair, we were surprised because we thought there was an understanding as to what the discipline would be. We were disappointed. We appreciated the speaker's attempts to resolve this so it didn't have to go forward in a public process. But this is truly what this is about. And I'll quote, "Again, we should never hesitate to publicly and vigorously criticize the philosophy, the votes, the approach, the demeanor, and the volume of each other's debate. But no one on either side of the aisle should ever knowingly publish false and defamatory statements for no purpose other than to damage another member's reputation in the community and to attempt to silence a member through public intimidation. When false statements are published that have an impact on any member's family and potentially on a member's ability to provide his or her family, to provide for his or her family, there must be consequences." That's what this is about, and I'll just add, Madam Chair, this was part of the discussions that Representative Gardner participated in. And again, I truly appreciate that he is sorry that he ever sent this. But this was not inadvertent. This was intentional. This was not technical. He did this knowing what this technology was and intending to send a certain message out. I have a 14-year-old daughter, and I have six boys. And I said this to Representative Gardner, and I'll say it to this committee. It's one thing to go after me with everything you have about my political philosophies, about my approach, everything else. When you purposely, and to try and couch it in it's a tension that we deal with and the tight timelines and we get on each other's nerves, that isn't the issue. When you send out a statement in writing in the public forum that suggests that I purposely am harassing women, when I have a 14-year-old daughter who that ultimately will have access to these, that's really important. And this applies not only to me, but every other member in the chamber. And I would ask you to take that into consideration when you make your determination on, one, whether the allegations are true, they clearly are, and two, whether discipline is warranted, clearly it is. Representative Biskins can speak for himself, certainly not expulsion, certainly not censure, but a reprimand of the sort that we understood Representative Gardner had already agreed to. Thank you.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. The final thing I will add is that, and it dovetails off of the letter that we received from on May 14th from the Speaker of the House and the Minority Leader of the House of Representatives. We're looking at new technologies, but they are powerful technologies. These technologies, the information put out on these technologies stretches even beyond that of radio, of television, and of newspapers. Now take the two comments that were made about two members of this body, take them out of Twitter, which goes worldwide, and put them in the local newspaper. Would you consider that to be a breach of ethical standards? I believe you would. Would you consider that a member has been involved in violent behavior and it's put in the newspaper a breach of ethical conduct? You have to. Would you believe that a statement about a member saying he demeans and belittles women put in the newspaper would constitute a breach of ethical conduct? Of course he would. If it were said on television, if it were said on the radio. We're looking at new technologies now that go even beyond those reaches. Even beyond those reaches. It's every one of the markets I mentioned and goes beyond. To say that what was put out there is not a violation of ethics or is de minimis in nature, I think it is dangerous. It's dangerous to this body. It's dangerous to this process, and Madam Chair and members, I believe it would be a precedent that would be unacceptable for us to set here today. Thank you.
Question. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to either Representative Diskins or Emmer, I have a couple questions here just about how you think we should proceed here. As Representative Murphy said, the last time this committee was gathered at a hearing like this was the year 2000, and although I don't know that what we do here would be formally a precedent that would bind future ethics committees, I think it would probably instruct future ethics committees. So just so I understand, I think what the formal violation here is a violation, as I read it in the actual complaint, is a violation not necessarily of a rule per se, but of the code of conduct. Is that right? That what you're alleging is basically a violation of the code of conduct more than a particular House rule?
Representative Emmer.
Madam Chair, Representative Simon. I don't parse them that way. I mean, whether it's the code of conduct, I think that's what's cited, so you are correct about that, but those are rules or policies that we live by, as well as what I'm going to submit to you before I leave today, which is another copy of the Speaker's May 14th letter, which is another policy having to do with electronic communications. I mean, whether we call them policies or rules, if that's what you're asking, yes, I think that is the code of conduct. This is the House policy on electronic communications.
Okay. Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does it make a difference to either of you that this communication took place apparently on the House floor? Would the result be different, do you think, if today or next week, when we weren't even in session and away from the building, Representative Gardner engaged in the same conduct, the same Twitter messages with the same content? Would that make a difference? In other words, is the key thing here that it was done in the Capitol on the House floor? Would you have the same concern? Would we be here today if it were different?
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Simon, that's a hypothetical speculation that I haven't thought much about. I just look at the facts in front of us and the statements being made. I haven't thought much about that, so interesting speculation. I'll let Representative Emmer speak for himself.
I would only add, Madam Speaker and Representative Simon, that the complaint clearly suggests that one of the reasons this is a problem is because during an active debate, it can have an effect of intimidating members. If all of a sudden members start getting emails and the like from members of the public based on accusations like this, it can have an effect on the debate, which I think is even more serious. But I don't know that it changes whether you're outside of the chamber or not. We all have an obligation to behave properly.
Just one other follow-up.
Wait, Representative Biskin.
Well, and thank you, Madam Chair. And I will add to what Representative Emmer just mentioned, because to the members of the committee, this was brought to our attention during the debate on the House floor, during the debate. Here, look at what's been Twittered about you, all right, out in the public. So, But I'll come back to my initial statement about precedents as well, and looking at this, if this were in the newspaper, if this were written about you, Representative Simon, in the newspaper, does it change? And yet we're talking about an even broader public audience.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In Attachment 3, Representative, to your submission of yesterday, this is the email. I think it was a response to Representative Mariani, part of that email chain. You said in there that you accepted Representative Gardner's apology, but I'm led to believe when I read this and today that part of the issue here, just procedurally, is that you believed that you were also owed a spoken apology on the floor of the House, and you believe you didn't get that as well. Is that right? Am I reading that right?
Madam.
Representative Emmer.
Representative Simon, yes and no. I mean, the issue is not so much that it was the House floor. That's the only place that, at least from our perspective, an apology to us is accepted. That's great. But remember where these statements were made, and they're out in the public. How does that get out to those folks? I think it just got to the point where we were late in the session and we agreed with what the speaker had suggested, which was an apology on the floor. That really didn't, I mean, if this were going to be done right, there should have been some type of public communication similar to what was sent out, defaming us. You know, the malicious statements that went out into that forum that Representative Biskins has noted, you know, it's endless where that goes. So it was that the apology was accepted, the personal one, but then that other piece of how do you try to undo what Representative Gardner's actions have done, and that's why that second piece, the answer is yes.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I was looking for a copy of the May 14th document, and that's been passed out, so I appreciate that. But I do have a question on process. Why weren't there two separate ethics complaints filed, in that there's two of you, individual things were said that were different about each of you? You weren't included in the same sentence, if you will. Can you tell me why you didn't choose to do two separate complaints as opposed to one together?
Madam Chair.
Representative Emmer.
Representative Holberg. Representative Biskins obviously will have to speak for himself, but when this was brought to me on the House floor, the first thing I did was I took it over and I put it on Representative Gardner's chair, because I thought that after Representative Gardner had seen it, he might come over to me or to Representative Biskins, figuring that it's one of us that put it there. And say, you know, I'm really sorry, this is what was going on. None of that happened. So because it was right then, right there, and again, I think I've made it clear to the committee, when this involves something that's malicious, I believe, towards my family, and that's the way I took it. When I have a daughter at home who, you know, she has access to this stuff more than I do, I wrote the complaint immediately, and Representative Biskins, I included those statements because it's the whole thing together. You know, the two members that were probably as vocal as any in the minority in that debate. One is alleged to have a black eye, suggesting he's been violent or been in some type of physical confrontation. And the other one is suggested to be particularly harassing towards women on the House floor. The two of them combined is what gives you the picture. So I drafted it myself, and then I showed Representative Biskins what I was doing, and my understanding is he decided he was going to join in the complaint. Plus, the rule requires that two members must sign off on it. So that's why I did it that way. I don't know if Representative Biskins has another or anything to add.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Holberg. Simply put, it's when it was presented to me, it was presented as a whole. The Twitter page that I say didn't come to me in piecemeal. I don't do Twitter. It came to me on a sheet of paper. And on that sheet of paper, in putting the two things together, as Representative Emmer said, about two fairly vocal, sometimes loud and sometimes passionate, and some would say even aggressive in our debate on the House floor, put together the statements, it just seemed natural for this to go together as one complaint. Because the complaint really is about defaming members through this new form of communication, public communication.
And
Representative Holberg.
If I might, Representative Biskins, did you have a black eye that night?
Representative Biskins.
Madam Chair, no, I did not. And Representative Holberg, you sat in my seat, and yours is not much different to those lights above us. I've got four of them that shine directly in my face. And at the end of session, with the lights, with tired eyes, it helps. Plus, I think it probably gives me a more menacing outlook, but or persona, I don't know. But no, and then I've warned them before on the House floor. I warned them at the end of session last year as well. So, no, I did not have a black eye.
And some people would say, cool, Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I said that he looked like he belonged on the Mod Squad from the 60s, but anyway. Representative Emmer, have you ever had female colleagues express any concern or discomfort with your communications with them, if any concern with rage or sarcasm on the House floor?
Madam
Representative
Chair,
Emmer.
Representative Holberg, never. Never. And even though I pride myself on trying to be, I have a lot of passion and I do get aggressive, but it's no different than a cross-examination in a trial setting. If you can defend your facts, if you can defend your premise, then there should be no issue. And healthy, spirited debate, I mean, that's what I'm trained for. And when you walk out of a courtroom, as Representative Smith, Representative Simon, and others that are in the profession that I am will tell you, the first thing you do with your adversary is you shake their hand, you ask them how their family's doing, how are your kids doing, and you are friends. That's what our civil society is supposed to be about. And I think this type of thing, maybe that's why I took it even more to heart. We can't continue down the road where we try to intimidate people into keeping their mouths closed. This system doesn't work unless people can have a free and honest debate of issues. And no, Representative Holbert, I've had just the opposite. And I try to make a point of going over and talking to people on the other side of the aisle so they know that while I might be aggressive and passionate, I'm just as much friendly as I am passionate.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Emmer, this is the document you were talking about, the Twitter.
That is, that's the second page of it? Is that right? Yes, I believe that's it.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for now. Representative Gardner.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I would like to ask Representative Hartman and Representative Winkler to join me, but I have a brief statement which I'd like to read, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Please proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Ethics Committee. Thank you for your time today to address this important issue. I have a brief statement, and then I'd be happy to answer any questions. This complaint does not include allegations of corruption, theft, or misuse of public funds, improperly accepting gifts, or improper political activity. It involves the use of unkind words used about other members. I would doubt that there's a member of this House who has never said or written something he or she regretted. It happens to everyone at some point. What matters is what that person chooses to do to remedy the situation. I would offer that I have taken extraordinary steps to apologize to the complainants and to create an environment where others can learn from my example to improve conduct in the Minnesota House. Let me outline the steps I have taken to address my actions. On Friday, May 8th, within hours of the initial complaint and on the advice of the Speaker, I deleted the offending messages on Twitter and informed Representative Emmer of this action. On Monday, May 11th, I prepared and delivered a written apology to the complainants. Earlier in the day, I apologized personally to Representative Emmer. On Wednesday, May 13th, I emailed the letter of apology along with a cover message, which has been referred to, in order to inform my House colleagues of my error. You should have a copy of this cover message, which was designed to let members know of my actions and to use the incident as a way to set a more positive tone for communications among House members for the duration of the session. This action was perhaps premature, but it was done out of a sincere desire with deep remorse to provide some satisfaction to the complainants in the most timely fashion possible. Approximately 20 members from both caucuses expressed their satisfaction to me personally that I had owned up to my actions and believe that this action was appropriate and commensurate to the offense. Representative Emmer referred to another email which he sent to Representative Mariani and all members, and in my opinion, he did not respond positively to the action, although he did say that he accepted the apology. At a meeting with the Speaker that week, Representative Emmer correctly stated, and he has said so today, that despite my efforts to delete the offending messages, the information could be present on the Internet indefinitely. As a response, I sent a message using Twitter with a link to the written apology on my personal blog site so that anyone viewing the offending material would also have my apology online. That letter is still on my blog site and is viewed regularly by my constituents and is likely to be on the Internet indefinitely. I was just going to say that I got 10 times more web traffic on my blog site as a result of this, which tells me that my usual reporting there is somewhat dull. By Thursday, May 14th, in an attempt to delete any archived versions of the offending material, not being that familiar with how Twitter works myself, I canceled the Twitter account altogether on the advice of Twitter technicians, so I have not had access to Twitter since May 14th. Later in the day, I was informed by Mr. Charbonneau that the complainants would withdraw the ethics complaint if I also made an apology to members on the floor. This appeared to be a demand that was duplicative after the actions already taken, and it also seemed to raise the penalty to a level that was not commensurate with the offense. I respectfully declined this demand, and the complainants then asked the Speaker to refer the ethics complaint to the Ethics Committee, and here we are. Madam Chair, members, based on Representative Emmer's email of May 13th and the complainant's May 16th letter to the Speaker, it is not clear that to me that an additional apology on the floor, in addition to the face-to-face apology to Representative Emmer, a written apology, a transmittal of the apology to all members, my Twitter followers, and to my own constituents on my blog site would provide any additional resolution. My apology has become as public as a public apology can be. I have already taken responsibility for my actions, expressed sincere remorse to the complainants, voluntarily canceled my Twitter account, and sent a clear message to other members that there are boundaries with new social networking tools that cannot be crossed. My actions since May 8th have been appropriate, proactive, and sincere. At the same time, the Speaker and Minority Leader have taken the appropriate step of reminding all members and staff about House policy regarding appropriate electronic communication. This was very welcome, as many members and staff have somewhat been pushing the limits of appropriate communication in recent months. Madam Chair and members, you have several options before you. According to the complaint process flowchart that I have received, you could recommend, quote, clarifying a law, rule, policy, or behavior norm and may caution members about it, unquote. This task has essentially been completed by the memo from leadership regarding electronic communication. You may also determine that House rules were violated, but I believe that you would agree that the remedies I have offered have been sufficient and avoid the need for further disciplinary action. You may also find that the complaint is a de minimis violation that does not warrant discipline. Finally, I would express the concern that setting a standard in this case for additional discipline would spur a large number of similar complaints in the coming session at the slightest hint of disrespectful behavior, whether it's electronic or verbal, and would take us away from the critical work of addressing our continued fiscal situation and other important work. Thank you for your attention, Madam Chair, and I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Madam Chair,
Representative Hartman.
I'd like to make just a brief statement on behalf of Representative Gardner regarding the complaint made by Representative Emmer and Representative Biskins, and offer the committee that it has really three choices before it today. It can find that Representative Gardner has made a discourteous statement and that he has made a sufficient apology and that there is not an ethics violation requiring further action by this committee. This committee could find that there was a discourteous statement and that additional apology is required and no ethics violation has occurred. Or this committee can find probable cause that an ethics violation has occurred and set the matter on for an evidentiary hearing. Representative Emmer complains that the statements made by Representative Gardner were false and defamatory. That's the crux of his complaint. And in determining whether the statements are false and defamatory, I would ask you to look carefully at the comments on the Twitter feed that were attached to Representative Emmer's submission of June 1st in attachment 1, page 3. The statements he complains of are, Emmer seems to belittle his female colleagues, open parentheses, rage, comma, sarcasm, close parentheses, on the floor more than the men, question mark. Great faith to the GOP, question mark. Then with regard to Representative Biskins, the statement that's complained of is, why is Biskins wearing sunglasses? Question mark. Black eyes? Question mark. In order for a statement under Minnesota law to be false and defamatory, it has to be a statement. It is not a matter of expressing one's opinion. The law is very clear that it has to be a statement that is capable of being true or false. So if this committee determines that there's probable cause of a violation and we go on to an evidentiary hearing, then the matter before this committee at the evidentiary hearing would be whether the statements were capable of being true and false, and whether they were true or false, and would devolve into a situation of providing evidence of statements that were made with rage and sarcasm toward male colleagues and statements made with rage and sarcasm toward female colleagues, so that this committee could determine whether the alleged statement was true or false. I think that this committee should determine that these comments were discourteous, but they did not rise to the level of an ethics violation. They are questions and statements of opinion, not statements, so they are not capable of being defamation under Minnesota law.
Commissioner Winkler?
Madam Chair, I'd just like to very briefly touch on, I think, a little bit of legal context. Representative Gardner is not a lawyer, and so he did ask for a little bit of help in sorting out the legal requirements, which is the reason for Representative Portman and I sitting with him today. First of all, I think it's important to understand that we're dealing with two different questions. The first is a question of tort law, which is defamation, and the second is a question of House ethics or House policies. In Minnesota law, in order for a statement about a public official to be defamatory, there is a very, very high standard that needs to be met. And the reason there is a high standard is because of the First Amendment to the Constitution. The Supreme Court, very famously in the case called New York Times v. Sullivan, sorted through this issue and identified the tension that we have between being true and respectful in the public square versus the importance of having a robust debate. And there's a quote, I think, that is instructive in that regard. And the quote is that, in the United States, we have a, quote, profound national commitment to the principle that debate on public issues should be uninhibited, robust, and wide open, and that it may well include vehement, caustic, and sometimes unpleasantly sharp attacks on government and public officials, end quote. Now, that's the standard for defamation for public officials, or at least that's the characterization of the principle behind the defamation standard for public officials. And there's extensive case law on that, and I think it's safe to say that the statements made by Representative Gardner do not meet that very high standard for defamation of a public official. But the question, I think, and so it's important, I think, to distinguish that from the question before this committee, which is a violation of House ethics. It's my understanding that there's been no cited violation of House rules. There has been no cited violation of even the summary of rules that it was included in the House Research Legislative Ethics Guide. What we're talking about is a violation that's alleged of a code of conduct. A code of conduct that is broad and I think subject to a great deal of interpretation by members. And I am concerned, as Representative Gardner stated, that if we find a violation that would merit discipline in this matter, that we would really be opening up a very wide opening for ethics complaints in the future. The House conduct policy includes the admonition that everyone should be treated with respect, fairness, and courtesy, that we should all exercise sound judgment, and that we should use the power and facilities of the House of Representatives only to advance the common good. Now, it is inherent in the nature of our debate and in our understandings and misunderstandings of each other's policies, principles, and political programs that any number of these rules
may be seen to be violated at various times. I think it would be very difficult to separate out the substance of the debate from the individuals involved if we use this standard of conduct to sanction or to in some way admonish members. Representative Gardner, I think, has already responded appropriately to the level of his violation, a violation of courtesy and respect. And Madam Chair and members of the committee, I think in the context, the legal context and the rules context that we're dealing with, his level of response has met the level of violation.
Representative Gardner,
do you have the Twitter evidence, the Twitter sheet before you?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Gardner, I don't know about Twitters or tweets. I understand the individual things that are numbered 1 to 15 are tweets.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
And the whole thing is a Twitter?
Madam Chair, Twitter is the overall network, similar to, say, GroupWise for our email, where the Internet is a platform for finding information. Twitter is a social networking tool where you have followers who must choose to follow you and link to you so they receive messages from you.
And you pay money, and they pay money to receive these messages and to give those messages?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there is no fee to use Twitter. I suspect some enterprising 20-somethings invented this in a garage or a basement somewhere and have propagated these tools on the Internet. And we are, I think Representative Diskins is correct in saying we're in new ground and using new electronic tools. It is, I'm finding, a little too experimental for some of us.
Okay.
But I dispensed with using it, I think, because I think its value is quite limited.
And when you gave us some dates, when did you have this, and when did you unsubscribe?
Madam Chair, I know when I unsubscribed, which was as soon as I completed sending the apology out to my followers, because anyone who might have seen the offending tweets would also receive the apology, and I did that in good faith, understanding Representative Emmer's concern that in a violation or a discourteous comment made electronically should also be addressed electronically. I then checked with Twitter technicians electronically and said, what's the best way to make sure that any archive versions are limited in where they are? And their recommendation to me was, just drop the whole account, just cancel it completely. So I have not had access since May 14th. I probably did not use it before April 15th.
Okay, can you indulge me and go through? I understand to do Twitter right, we have to start like at number 15 and then go to 14. And is that how you... How we,
Madam Chair, members, I believe that's correct. The I would say
are
that
these
would be
in
correct. They're in reverse chronological order.
Okay, and are they in response to other things that came before you, or is this all supposed to make sense?
Madam Chair and members, I think that's a very good question. I think that the Twitter community is a little too insular. So you kind of have to be into it to understand the context. There are actually members of the media who are using Twitter on a minute-by-minute basis. I actually signed up for it so I could find out what reporters were saying, let's say, in the governor's press conference to find out what was going on because we couldn't get press access while we were, view anything on the floor. So you could get up-to-the-minute information. Or the Pioneer Press is a very good update and the uptake blog, so you can actually see what the media is commenting on while we're debating also. So, and members have been commenting also. But I wouldn't say, Representative Emmer's concern is that this information is out there forever, and I think the total number of so-called followers, the people who are receiving messages from me, couldn't have added up to more than 25. People.
Okay, and And do they all receive all these people that were into your Twitter? These 25 people, then they received all 15 of the tweets?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it all depends on who is following at any given time. When you start, there's probably two people. When I finish, there's probably 25. So it's people start to sign up as they recognize you're online.
Oh.
And the various tweets don't have to have any significance to the one before it.
I would say that's a fair statement, Madam Chair.
And that's why we're talking about fish photos.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Debunking misinformation, but that has to do with the debate that was going on?
Madam Chair, that is correct. Actually, I believe several members had photos of them catching fish as their photo next to their Twitter account, and my collegial joke with them was, well, I've got to get one of those fish photos too. So none of these are actually have any context to them at all.
But did they have context with the passionate discussion that was going on the floor about the House tax bill?
Madam Chair, I would say there is a feeling I had after many weeks of debate on what I was thinking at the time.
Any other questions? Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gardner, your number 9 tweet, you state a shameful Emmer amendment. Can you tell me what amendment that was and what was shameful about it?
Madam Chair, Representative Holbrook, this actually was an amendment regarding a doula legislation. And the amendment reported, I don't have the exact words in front of me, that no one would be allowed to essentially be a doula if they were an adherent to Sharia law. And I actually happened to have worked with some American Muslims in a previous job and knew quite a bit about the issue of what Sharia law was. And it essentially, the amendment in effect said that one would be prohibited from practicing their occupation or their duty because of their religious beliefs, and I had a problem with that. And I attempted to link to examples of how Sharia courts, which Representative Emmer referenced in the UK, work, and also rabbinical courts in the United States. During the debate, he said, we don't want to have Sharia courts in the United States like they do in Britain. And so I offered that link as a way for people to have a Sunday Times article which explained how they work in detail as a method of alternative dispute resolution.
And Madam Chair, and so can you maybe just boil it down to what was shameful about that?
Madam Chair, Representative Holbrook, perhaps that's a strong word, but I took offense at the singling out of a group because of their religious beliefs in the amendment.
And
unfortunately, I was not on the House floor when the discussion started. I would have spoken on the floor on it, but I didn't get there in time.
Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then did you observe Representative Biskins with a black eye?
Madam Chair, Representative Holbrook, I did not because he was wearing sunglasses on the floor, so I could not see.
And
it made me a little uncomfortable.
Madam
Representative Holbrook.
Chair, did you represent or did you witness or hear of Representative Biskins being in any altercation or fight or
Madam
might
Chair,
Representative cause
Holbrook,
a black eye?
Fault of Twitter is that you can only use 120 characters, and there's not space in there to point out that I would never harbor any thoughts of Representative Biskins being violent in any way, and I apologize if I have given that impression to him.
And
Representative Holbrook.
Representative Gardner, your comment about Representative Emmer seeming to belittle female colleagues with rage and sarcasm, do you have any examples of that, or women that have spoken to you about concerns about how Representative Emmer has treated them personally, or?
Madam Chair, Representative Fulberg, I think this is the issue that is sort of at the heart of the matter. I made a thought that I believed to be the case at the time. I have observed kind of mocking behavior where female members' words are spoken back to them in a sarcastic way. I have observed people called clueless, a whole variety of other things. I would just like to defuse the situation and maybe leave it there. If you really want to pursue that, we could be here a while.
Representative Holbrook, I would represent Horton. I'd like to offer that the issue of whether Representative Emmer expressed more rage and sarcasm toward female members would be an appropriate subject area if this committee determines there's probable cause of an ethics violation, and evidence would be submitted at an additional hearing on this matter. But I don't necessarily think it would be productive for this committee to have a back and forth today, because I think that the comments are clearly just discourteous and a statement of opinion rather than a statement of fact. And if this committee determines it wants to view it as a statement of fact and then determine whether it's true or not, that would be a different conversation for a different day, and we would be prepared to offer evidence on that issue.
Well, and Madam Chair, I'm not an attorney, and I'm glad that I'm not most days, but I thought that our job here today had to do with behavior of members, and not that this isn't a court of law, but rather a very serious situation in which we stand in judgment of our colleagues, which I always said when I got put on this committee, I hope we never had to meet, and I find myself sitting here, and I do take this very seriously, and so I'm trying to discern. I'm not here for a legal battle or whatever. I'm here to discern what the standards before this body, my years of experience here, and how people treat each other, and you know, what the situation is, what the intent were, if possible, to discern of individuals' behavior, what the ramifications are. And so I'll certainly understand if we get to a point where we're going to, you know, do a whole investigation or whatever, that takes on a different tone. But again, this is about the reputation of the body, the behavior of its members, and what's to be tolerated and what isn't. And I view that completely outside of the lawyer world, I guess, for lack of a better term. And the other, right, Representative Gardner, I just have one other question, and you haven't addressed it directly, but in the letter from Representative Biskins and Emmer dated June 1st, on page 2, the first full paragraph, this letter states that you initially agreed to a private reprimand and other discipline she deemed appropriate, i.e. a public apology to the members of the House. Did you agree to a public apology to members of the House?
Representative Gardner.
Madam Chair, and Representative Holberg, if it's all right, perhaps I can give a characterization of the meeting in which Representative Emmer and Biskins have come away with that impression, because I did not come away with a definitive impression that that was going to be a requirement. We had a general discussion among the minority leader, the speaker, the two agreed parties, and myself, to talk about the situation. The two complainants had the chance to express their concerns, which they have done here today. We talked about the broader issues, about how this fits into the new social networking tools, how does technology change the way we speak to each other. And I offered the suggestion of using Twitter to send the written apology out, and heads kind of nodded. You know, I was in kind of a very embarrassed state at the moment, so I was not necessarily taking notes or affirming that anything was agreed to. I do recall that Representative Emmer, Representative Biskins, and Representative Seifert said they would talk about it, about what actions to take. But I do not specifically recall anybody saying that I must make a public apology on the floor. That may have happened, but that is not my recollection. Until staff was sort of going back and forth between the parties about how to resolve the issue, and they said, well, that's despite everything you've done, you still have to do that. Now, I was not in the room with the complainants for the entire meeting. I thought it was important for them to have a chance to talk to each other, and someone may have said that's part of the arrangement, but that is not my recollection.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, thank you. I have a question of Representative Winkler and then a question or so of Representative Gardner. Representative Winkler, the House Ethics Committee has purview over violations of law, rule, administrative policy, norms of behavior. Do you disagree with that?
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, no, not at all.
All right. Madam Chair, Representative Gardner. In your letter dated May 13th, email communication, I should be more precise, to all DFL representatives and all GOP representatives, May 13, 11:10 a.m., you state, Representative Gardner, that we still need to maintain high standards in our communications to each other. You go on in your email to say that you, quote, failed to maintain those high standards, unquote. Would you tell this committee what standards you failed to maintain?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, in that email, I was, let's put it this way, on a daily basis, we speak privately to other members about our opinions. Sometimes those are not very positive. I feel that the major error for which I was taking responsibility was using a tool which was somewhat public in nature to share those, and I felt very remorseful about doing that.
Madam Chair, Representative Gardner.
Representative
Smith. Let me try it this way. Did you fail to maintain the standard of treating Representative Emmer and Biskins with respect, fairness, or courtesy in these transmissions?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I would definitely say I was discourteous to my two colleagues.
Madam Chair.
I am not an attorney, so I appreciated Representative Holberg's comments about trying to sort this out in a legal context.
Madam Chair, Representative Gardner, did you fail to maintain the standard of respect in your communication?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I would say that my comments were not of the highest respectful tone that one should take with other members.
Madam Chair, so Representative Gardner, you did not use respect.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I think that would be fair to say.
Madam Chair, Representative Gardner, did you fail to exercise sound judgment in sending those transmissions?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I guess that would be correct.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Gardner, also looking at the code of conduct that this committee has, did you, in those transmissions, did you also fail, in your own admission of failing to maintain those high standards, was one of those standards, did you fail to maintain the respect for the principles of representative democracy?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I'm afraid I'd have to look at the principles of representative democracy to be able to answer your question fully.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Gardner, I'm just trying to winnow down which of the high standards, since you don't specify in your communication which ones you failed to maintain. Did you, in your communication on your Twittering, did you fail to maintain the high standard of being respectful of the House of Representatives as a whole?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I would say I was discourteous to two members. I was pleased by the reaction to my letter of apology from my colleagues who felt that they were satisfied because I would be concerned that they would be concerned about the reputation of the house as a whole, and I felt that their concerns were satisfied.
Madam Chair, let me have one last question here. Representative Gardner, did you fail to maintain the high standard of not communicating in an offensive, patently offensive manner?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, could you repeat the question for me?
Representative Gardner, did you fail to maintain the high standards of communicating your communications in a non-patently offensive manner? Were your communications offensive?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I think the two parties felt...
Representative Gardner, yes or no, were they offensive?
They were offensive to Representative Biskin's Zimmer.
Representative Gardner, how about anyone else who read them?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I don't know. I haven't actually heard from anybody who's told me they were offended by the remarks.
Madam Chair, that's all for now.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gardner, the ethics complaint here, I'm looking at the ethics complaint dated May 8, 2009. There are a lot of individual allegations here. Obviously, you're not contesting that you sent these messages. That, I think, we all agree on. But there's some other characterizations here that I'd like to ask you about on the record here. If you look at the front page towards the bottom, there's a paragraph that says, Representative Gardner's communications were clearly designed to suggest that his colleagues are physically violent and prone to harassment of female members of the House of Representatives. So this is a factual allegation that gets to your motives and what you designed. So I just want to ask you here, because I didn't see it anywhere explicitly in any of the other materials we have before us, I'll take the allegations one at a time. Were the Twitter communications that we've seen designed by you to suggest that Representative Biskins was physically violent? Was that your design?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, no.
Why do you say that?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, I have never thought of Representative Biskins as being a violent person. It unfortunately was not conveyed as such in the message, but...
Madam Chair...
Representative Simon.
Thank you. And Representative Gardner, were the Twitter comments that we've seen here clearly designed to suggest that Representative Emmer was prone to harassment of female members? Was that your design?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, right. It was my observation and posed as a question. I think, yeah. I did not design, I did not stay up late and work hard to figure out how to chill debate, as the phrase has been used, from Representative Emmer or Representative Biskin.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gardner, there's been some talk here about the characterization that you used in the apology, the fact that you characterized it as a miscommunication or how not to communicate between and among members. Looking back, would you have characterized that differently? Do you still believe that this is a matter of communicating between and among members, or is it something else?
Representative
Manager, Gardner. Representative Simon, I think in the heat of debate, we all have thoughts which are best kept to ourselves. I think my error was using a tool which was a little more public than that.
Any further questions? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm looking at this Twitter page, and it shows 30 following and 58 followers. Can you, used a number of 24, 25. Can you tell me what those numbers represent?
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, I believe that 30 stands for the number of people I am following. I did follow. And followers are the number of people who are following me. I will say that as this incident emerged, the number of people seeking to follow me increased greatly. But at the time of the original messages, I want to say the number of followers, the people who are receiving messages from me, was no more than 25. Although I can't say for sure because it changed that day.
And
Representative Hobart.
Madam Chair, do you know who these people are?
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, in some cases, yes, in other cases, no. I know there were members and partisan staff who monitor members, and there are others who, quite frankly, I don't know who they are.
And, Madam Chair, is it conceivable that there's members of the public within this group?
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, I couldn't tell you for sure. All you have is a, sort of an alias, a name, but I don't really know for sure.
And Madam Chair, I'm just going back. I'm looking at your May 13th email, and it's titled How Not to Communicate with Each Other, and that it seems to be the total focus of the email. Is not the purpose of Twitter used by politicians to get your information out to the public in a broader range?
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, it can be. It also can just be a social networking tool to chat with your colleagues also.
And Madam Chair, could could you see why some may look at your email about how to communicate with each other and feel that you may have missed the mark and that Twitter is a more public venue than just communication between members, and that your email, in fact, failed to address what was the greatest concern of those that feel that they've been harmed, and that this communication went out over the Twitter waves or whatever you want to call it, hither and yon, and that in fact that communication was not between members as was addressed in your email, but more public in nature.
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, there are actually two separate apologies, if you will. There were, you have the email that I sent out to members, which is we should take heed of what we're, how we're speaking to each other, which attached my letter of apology to Representative Biskins and Representative Emmer. I sent a separate message to the Twitter followers saying not how not to communicate with members. I can't remember what the heading was, but it was the heading was my apology to Representative Biskins and Representative Emmer, with a link to my blog site with the letter of apology. And there was a something on that link that said, you know, I've aired, and it wasn't addressed to members. It was addressed to those people in the public who might be seeing it.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Holbert.
So in fact, what you sent out on your blog or whatever was different than the May 11th letter to Representatives Emmer and Biskins, is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, the May 11th letter is on my blog site. It is still there. That is what I linked people to from Twitter, so they could all see the public apology to the two complainants. But there had to be sort of a cover message. You can't fit all of this. That was actually one of the speaker's questions to me in our meeting. How do you fit all this into 120 characters in Twitter? And so on Twitter, my message was, here's my apology to Representative Biskins and Emmer, linking into my blog site, which had this May 11th letter on it.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Speaker, Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, I think there might be some confusion. The email actually contained the attachment of the letter, and the letter does not apologize for communication between members. The May 11th letter itself says that using a social network, I sent out two messages that were disparaging of you and Representative Biskins. So the letter of apology that he signed and addressed to Representatives Biskins and Emmer was not an apology about communication between colleagues. It was an apology for sending out a message like that about colleagues. And so the email was, as Representative Gardner said, was addressed to legislative members, but it attached a letter that was more general in nature. The apology was more general in nature.
It was the May 11th letter on his letterhead.
Correct, Madam Chair.
But
we don't have the Twitter. Here is my Twitter apology.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there was a tweet which was less than 120 characters, which said, here is my apology to Representative Biskins and Representative Emmer, with a link, which you click on, that takes you directly to my blog site where you click on a JPEG file, which was the May 11th letter.
That was sent to www.paulgardner53ablogspot.com.
That is correct.
And Madam Chair, just for clarification purposes, did you have a cover letter or an explanation that, besides the attachment, when they went to your blog, was the only thing they saw the May 11th letter, or did you post additional verbiage on your blog related to this incident?
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, the message which is still there on the blog site includes the text of my email to members minus the last paragraph, which refers to, you know, Representative Osmond, and which no one would get. And I may have changed a few things for tense or something in the rest of it, but it was essentially the same message sent to members, but made it to be clear that it was for the rest of the public.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Gardner, I'm still not clear on what you just said over the last 5 minutes. In your testimony earlier, I have your email to the House members in front of me, dated May 13. I have a hard copy of it. In that, you say you failed to maintain the high standards. I heard you testify a few minutes ago that in your communication to your Twitter folks that you, quote, erred, unquote. Did you precisely tell the same folks in the same manner on your communication against Representative Emmer and Biskins earlier, did you tell them in the same manner that you told the House members that you, quote, failed to maintain high standards, unquote, or did you simply tell them you, quote, erred, unquote? Or are you telling two different audiences two different things?
Oh, I understand. Madam Chair, Representative Smith, what I sent out to members is the same as I put on my blog site, which is the first thing you will see when you link off the Twitter thing, minus just the bottom paragraph, which sort of is philosophical about heeding the words of Representative Osmond when he said we should treat each other better, which the general public wouldn't understand. But the same sentence, I'm sorry, I can't seem to... No, I'm looking for the my cover email. Oh, here we go. I did use the top two paragraphs, including the second one, on my blog site, which says I recently failed to maintain those high standards.
Representative Gardner, though, what your initial... was not your communication to your Twitter recipients and then a reference to your blog site? So in order to have read that you admitted to maintaining high standards, your Twitter recipients would have had to gone to your blog site. Is that what I'm hearing?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that is correct, because you can only...
Well, Representative Gardner, if they didn't go to your blog site and just received your Twitter message, they wouldn't know that you admitted to the House, by email at least, that you failed to maintain high standards. Isn't that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that's correct. Although most people click on the link, so...
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins, Representative Emmer, do you want to respond? Before you issue your responding statement, Representative Emmer, Representative Biskin, will you go to the tweets on the Twitter? Are we talking about
when we're talking about the offenses against you, is it about 8, 9, 1, 3, and 5?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, although I don't quite understand tweet number 5, I'll leave that go at this point. No, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the offending comments are found on items 1 and 3.
1 and 3?
1 and 3.
1 and 3.
Thank you. Representative Emmer?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'll be very brief. First, I can't tell you, I want to thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee for having the hearing, but I also want to express to you my level of disappointment in my colleagues. I didn't know that I could feel quite this amount of disappointment. I'm 48 years old. I've been here for 5 years now, and it's a wonderful process. You get to know people. You have a spirited and aggressive debate. But you know what? When you come here, you should behave the way you do in life. And that is, you try to maintain your high standards. And if you make a mistake, and those of you who know me know how I handle it, I'm the first one to say, you know what? I did that. I don't mix my words. I acknowledge it, and whatever consequences come with it, that's what we handle. Unfortunately, that's apparently not what we do here anymore. There's some things that, Madam Chair, we don't get to know personal things about people because some of us don't share them all that much. You only get to know the public persona that gets played out here. When I came here 5-6 years ago, I came here following my wife's uncle, a wonderful man by the name of Bob Ashback. You probably remember Bob, and you would probably have no idea, as many of the people in this room would probably have no idea that Bob Ashback was a relative. And I remember spending time with Senator Ashback back then, and for those of you who don't remember Senator Ashback, you might want to look him up. He served here before there were Republicans and Democrats, and then after there were Republicans and Democrats. And he told me back in the early 80s, when I was getting to know him, that one of the things that he saw happening here was they were losing this the spirit of togetherness, where they could vigorously debate one another and their points of view on issues. It was becoming more about personality. And he told me that Bob and Marge, their best friends while he was here in the legislature, even though he was the minority leader in the Senate for a time, in the caucus that would be identified as Republicans, that their best friends happened to be Rudy and Lola Perpich, and that they used to socialize and travel with Rudy and Lola Perpich. Well, you know, I thought when I came here 5 years ago that you could have spirited debate, and you could walk away just like we do in the trial setting, where we shake hands and we care about each other's families and the like. Today, I have three of my colleagues that came up, and I understand that they want to treat this as more of an adversarial proceeding. It's not. It's not about Representative Emmer. It's not about Representative Diskins. This could happen to anyone in the House of Representatives. This is about the Minnesota House of Representatives and how we conduct ourselves. That's what I thought we were here to talk about today. Not about law, and I will suggest to you that there's another part of the law, which I do practice, which is innuendo. You can have statements, but you can also have false innuendo based on statements. When you make a statement on a Twitter account that says that one member has a black eye and another member is particularly aggressive or harassing towards women, the innuendo is very clear, which brings me to why I am so almost to the point I'm going to have to reevaluate how I handle things here in the House of Representatives. For someone to sit before this committee and suggest, apparently now that they talk behind my back about rage and sarcasm, that has never been expressed to me by one female member in my caucus or the other caucus since I've been here. establishing, it's one of these terrible things that you put out and it's, you have to disprove a negative. There is no such incident here, despite what I've been told about my furrowed brow, despite what I've been told about my passionate position on issues. I've always handled those in good faith. And what we're here today, I thought, was to understand that we have certain code of ethics, we have certain policies, we have certain standards that we hold ourselves to when we serve in the House of Representatives. In this case, those were not met. That's a violation not only to the two members sitting before you, it's a violation to the members, to the House of Representatives, to the institution. That's why we have this process, and that's why there's no question from my perspective that Rule 7 on probable cause has been satisfied. And I'm going to leave out the other issues for another day. Thank you very much for allowing me to be here today.
Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. A couple of items as we move forward, and you determine whether or not there is probable cause here, whether or not there's been a violation, and whether or not said violation requires disciplinary action. One item that was brought up was the idea that there was no innuendo that Representative Biskins has been physical, and it would never happen. Then I'd ask the question, why the immediate deferral to a black eye, which would suggest a physical altercation? Is he trying to look cool? Are the lights really bright? Why the immediate reference to the black eye if there was no intent to provide innuendo as to a physical altercation? The second thing, and here's where sometimes I hate being a mathematician because you understand the numbers. Right? You know, it's been mentioned, well, he has 58 followers on his Twitter page. But each of those followers are in the system and they have followers. And so let's just say half of his 58 passed that on to 10 other people. This 58 has now grown into 290. Let's say half of those pass it on to another 100 people. Half of 290, 145 times 100. Members, you're over 14,000 people this has gone out to in just three generations. This is a brand new technology. This is a public forum. It is meant to communicate with the public, and this information goes out rapidly. And you can't undo it. Once it's been put out there, you can't undo it. We have, Representative Emmer and I, have the burden of showing that on a probable cause hearing that there was indeed probable cause to move forward, that a violation has indeed occurred. We have the burden to show that this violation does indeed require disciplinary action. Get back to the very fundamentals of why we're here. The respondent has already admitted that a violation occurred. Speaker of the House has already tried to broker disciplinary actions, thereby admitting that disciplinary actions are indeed warranted. I hope you would find the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Well, Madam Chair, if that concludes the presentation by both parties, I would move that the committee recess into executive session to discuss this matter.
Thank you.
Madam.
Representative Gardner.
Madam Chair, was there an opportunity just to make a brief statement? Madam Chair, I just wanted to reiterate after the testimony today that my response to the ethics complaint that was made against me was proportionate and appropriate. And I just also wanted to mention that any discussion about what I was describing in some of the tweets was in a direct response to Representative Holbrook's question. It was not my intention today to bring up any other issues other than the ethics complaint.
Thank you. Smith's motion is before us. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? This committee is in recess. The Ethics Committee will reconvene 2:45. I move pursuant to Rule 9 of the House Committee on Ethics and Rules of Procedure. A majority of the committee finds that this matter is appropriate for informal reconciliation. As Representative Gardner acknowledged before the House Ethics Committee on June 2, 2009, he did not exercise sound judgment by making statements about his colleagues that were not respectful and courteous, and he did not show respect to the House of Representatives. A majority of the committee recommends that Representative Gardner make an oral apology to the House at the earliest possible date. Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, I note that, Madam Chair, I note that Representative Viskins, one of the complainants, and Representative Gardner is present, and you're going to proceed to a vote on the motion that you've read. I must say this, and very briefly, when I first saw the complaint, I made no conclusions, but my initial reaction was that on the face of the complaint, I believe that the Representative Gardner had violated the code of conduct, and I initially came to the notion that I would support a finding of probable cause pursuant to Rule 6. After the presentations were made by both sides this morning, and after hearing Representative Gardner admit under questioning that he did not treat everyone with respect and fairness and courtesy as the code requires, that he did not exercise sound judgment, and that he was not respectful of the House of Representatives as a fundamental institution of civil government, I concluded that a violation of the code of conduct had occurred, and I argued while we were in executive session that we should find probable cause and that we should so inform the speaker and that the member named and the complainants that we should proceed to a hearing under Rule 10. Unfortunately, or fortunately for the body, we'll see, the matter has moved by consensus to the report that you've just read, and therefore I do support that motion as a product of consensus by the members of the Ethics Committee.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say a few remarks, too, for the record. I think, in general, this is sort of a consensus statement. I think that this is not about defamation. It's not even about Twitter, and that getting caught up in the mode of technology or communication is not particularly helpful, although maybe interesting. I think this is also a discussion of proportionality as well, and whether Representative Gardner should be compelled to do anything more than he's already done. And so I note that, for the record, that that we did not find that there was probable cause to proceed, and that we did not compel or command Representative Gardner to do anything. Rather, we do recommend that he make an oral apology, and that seems to be consistent with at least what the two complainants believed that they had heard would be done in a meeting this past May. So I just want to make those points clear.
Representative Holbrook.
Well, and thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess the other thing that I think that I'd at least like to put on the record and would certainly have staff confirm this, but it's my understanding that this motion or finding under Rule Number 9 does not preclude further action by the Ethics Committee on this particular issue. So in other words, there is a recommendation. We can't compel Representative Gardner to do anything, but that the Ethics Committee does have the right at a further date, if necessary, to reconsider
this complaint if we find it necessary.
Mr. Diebel.
Madam Chair and members, that is my understanding as well that this would be a pending matter, that a definitive position has not been taken on probable cause by the committee.
Representative Simon.
I just want to make one final comment, and because I would imagine some people are wondering, what does this mean for the future? And just from my personal standpoint, I think it's important to say that there really is a balance here. We have a code of conduct, and it's binding on all of us who are members of the House of Representatives. That said, I would hate to see the situation where every violation or perceived violation of the code of conduct gives rise to an ethics complaint and gives rise to probable cause. The code of conduct, for good reasons, I think, states some very broad, generally applicable standard about mutual respect, about courtesy, and about treating one another as we would want to be treated. You know, this was my fifth legislative session, and I've seen routinely conduct, I'm sure, from people in this room, maybe even from myself from time to time, that is not courteous and not respectful. And I think if we're going down the road where discourteous and disrespectful conduct rises to the level of an ethics violation, this committee will be meeting very, very frequently. And so I hope that the result here today, however it's read by anyone on any particular side or viewpoint, is not now a license for people who feel aggrieved or insulted or talked badly to in any way to come forward and make these now ethics violations subject to a hearing such as this one, or even further, a probable cause hearing. That's not, in my judgment, what a code of conduct is supposed to do. And I would hope that members, just as members would show restraint in the future about what they say, they would also show restraint in the complaints that they bring as well. Because we're not here to be the speech police about what people can and can't say. That said, there are rules of decorum that we ought to uphold, and we ought to all treat each other with dignity.
All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 The motion is adopted. This meeting is adjourned.